You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, January 3rd, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, we are back for 2022 as COVID surges, wreaking havoc in the Northeast and, frankly, many places around the country. Child tax credit expansion ends as Joe Manchin insists it be removed from the Build Back Better bill. Bernie Kerik provides the January 6th committee with planning documents. And you may be surprised by one show they label a key conservative influencer. Joe Biden tells Ukraine the U.S. will act if Russia invades. FDA authorizes Pfizer boosters to 12 to 15-year-olds. Trump-appointed FDIC chair submits her resignation. National Labor Relations Board to reconsider the standard for contractor status as gig exploiters are in the crosshairs. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's 2022. You know what that means? It's an election year. Meanwhile, 2022 also happens to usher in some labor protections, particularly in California. The U.S. asks for a 5G delay over aviation safety. And new report. Congratulations to the top 10%. You now own 89% of the stocks. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to 2022. Let's get right down to it. There's been some controversy. I'm sure you're aware. If you are watching me right now, I am bearded at the moment. We've already been asked by our IMers if Harry's has dropped us. No, this is my vacation beard. And Saul challenged me to keep it on for the show. I probably will keep it for a couple of days, and then I will shave it. And yes, I am also wearing new glasses. I generally wear these around the house. I don't know if I'm going to keep them for the show. Their anti-reflective powers are a little bit dubious. But enjoy. Meanwhile, you can hear the chuckle of Matt, who is not in office. We should also say Emma is out on vacation this week. Bradley is wearing a mask. Matt!
Wearing two.
Wearing two. We've got the filters going on over there. We will walk through all of the COVID-related stuff in a moment from all of us. We're going to take some calls during the show. I don't care about the format. We're going to blow out the format today. I know I always say that, that we're going to take calls, but we will. I promise you, we will. But first, let's just play this. Just because, I mean, I don't know what it's like in other parts of the country. I have a sense in some places. But New York is bonkers right now. There is COVID everywhere. Everybody I know knows people, if they haven't already gotten it, knows people who have contracted. This Omicron is everywhere. And really, the only thing that can keep you protected at this point. Obviously, if you've been vaccinated and boosted, and we'll talk about this, it is going to seriously diminish the severity of getting Omicron. And there's reason to believe that Omicron itself is less severe. We've been talking about that for weeks at this point. But the other thing that's happening, particularly like in terms of schools, both my kids are at school today. My son's teacher is out. My son's principal is out with COVID. At my daughter's school, she's texting me going, there's nobody here. She's at a school of 4,500 kids. And they're trying to do testing. Testing is really the only way. In fact, testing is the only reason why Bradley is here today, I would imagine. We will talk about that in a moment. But here is Brian Kilmeade on Fox and Friends this morning. We should say they're remote for some reason, not quite sure why, who is responding to the new testing regime that people are adopting to the extent that they can.
But overall, back to what Trump said, too much testing. There's way too much testing. There's testing to do testing. There's testing to go back to school, testing to go back to work. We can't afford it. Everywhere I go, the smallest town, the biggest city, one thing is consistent is people in pup tents waiting in the cold or waiting in long lines, waiting for a test they more than likely don't need. So this is something we have to change. And by the way, our president punted over the last few days. He did what Trump said. This up to the states. They know their population best to take care of it because this there's no federal solution. By the way, you ran on having a federal solution. You said you're going to kill the virus, not the economy. You did both. Congratulations. Every single step of the way, you have let the
All right, so this ding-dong is calling for less testing, which obviously is being imposed not by the federal government, although the federal government is now, you know, vaguely providing some free tests or some funding for some free tests. But he's complaining about, I don't know, companies that are testing, other entities that are testing. What would the possible reason be that you wouldn't want testing? It's absurd. Of course you want testing.
People might miss work.
People might miss work. But the bottom line is people are missing work anyways.
Yeah.
This is the thing that is just, there's this belief that seems to exist out there. And frankly, the Biden administration seems to have, at the very least, either adopted this belief or is just going to go along with it because they're politically afraid about it. They don't want to get blamed for the downturn in the economy. But there's going to be a downturn. I'd be surprised if we don't have higher unemployment numbers, a big spike in the next couple of weeks. I know of multiple people have told me, like people work in restaurants. The restaurants shut down. Gave them 3 or 4 days notice, shut down the restaurant. Because people aren't coming in. Because people don't want to get COVID. They don't know if they're going to be one of the people who are unlucky to end up in the hospital or to die. They don't know if they're going to be one of the people who are going to be unlucky and get long COVID. They don't want to be one of the people who give it to one of their family members. And so people are not going out. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if people say go out or don't go out. People are going to make up their own mind because they're afraid of it. It's just bizarre. It is bizarre. The virus exists. And one of the problems we have is that we have a significant portion of the population that is either anti-vax, refusing to get vaccinated, or just the anti, like, believe in COVID. My kids were in quarantine for 5 days after they returned from the holidays. Because there was somebody amongst their crew who was like reluctant to take a test. Like, I don't know why you would be reluctant to take a test. It's not like you gotta draw blood. It's not like it's uncomfortable. You gotta get something stuck up your nose.
Well, there's no good reasons for not wanting to take the test. The bad reasons are you're afraid of what it's gonna show you.
They were also very cagey as to whether they got vaccinated. Because somehow now the idea of telling somebody that you're vaccinated or not is like it's Tucker Carlson. It's like asking somebody what's your favorite sexual position with your wife. It's not polite to do in mixed company or something. It's bizarre. It's just this bizarre. I mean, does anybody ever remember, like, anybody ever taking offense as to whether or not they got the flu vaccine? You ask them whether you got the flu vaccine or not. They're like, I would never say. I would never say in mixed company. Did I get a diphtheria shot? No, I would never say. You took a trip to India. Did you have to? I would never say if I got vaccinated. Never. I had a headache. Did you take Advil? I would never, ever talk about that. Not mixed company. Would never say whether or not I took aspirin. I mean, it's just bizarre. And the Biden administration, sadly, seems to have basically, you know, given up and decided, like, we need to pretend that this is fine. They basically just gave up. And on some level, This could be the end game until there's another variant. I mean, that's the problem, is that it's quite possible to have so many infections. What are we up to now? Almost 500,000 a day in this country?
Yeah, let's just hope Omicron is as benign as it looks and the next variant is equally as benign.
Yep. Well, the hospitalizations and the deaths do not seem to be spiking along with the infections. And one of the dynamics that seems to be really the case, and Matt can attest to this, the vaccines appear to what they do, in addition to inhibiting the severity, when people first got COVID, and it was a completely novel COVID, no one had any type of immune response until it was much later in the progression of the disease within your body. But now, because people are vaccinated, maybe some people have had COVID before, your immune system recognizes that there's a virus in you. It recognizes the virus, and that's why you start feeling crappy. But it has cut down, I think, on the pre-symptomatic spread of the COVID, of at least, but the Omicron also just tends to be, apparently, is much more contagious. So I don't know. This is where we're at, and maybe there'll be so many people who get infected that, you know, we'll have 6-7 months after end of January where things get really calm. And then who knows?
Yeah. But one problem with certain areas I'm seeing is that, like, they're getting COVID or they're getting the Omicron, but they also still have some Delta working through. And that's where you're seeing rise in hospitalizations because it's hard to tell in the moment. Whereas New York, it seems like it's mainly Omicron. And so, I mean, knock on wood that the hospitalizations just aren't lagging still, I guess.
Yep. We'll have a sense, though, soon. You know, right now it's looking relatively good. You're not seeing the same level of spiking on hospitalizations and deaths. And the real problem is going to be in areas where you have lower rates. And this is what's going to happen. It's going to move to other parts of the country, just like the first wave did. And in those parts of the country, we could see maybe not commensurate spikes in hospitalization and deaths, but enough to break some hospital systems. So we'll see. I just know, you know, around here, people are masking up again. I imagine there's other places where people don't care. With all that said, many of you already know this. You have, if you purchased tickets, you probably got an email a couple of days ago. I guess it was on Thursday or Friday. I mean, I think maybe we start really thinking about it, you know, a week before that. But we have postponed the January 16th presentation of the Big Lie show that the Majority Report was going to put on in the Wilbur Theater in Boston, Massachusetts. We were near sold out. I think the Wilbur seats like somewhere like between 1,000 and 1,100 people, and we were pretty close to selling out. We have pushed the... I never thought we would, get that close. I thought we would have more like 500-600 people. But now we've pushed it to May 15th. It is a Sunday. We have dropped the time to 2 p.m. instead of 3 p.m. We were able to get in there just a little bit earlier. And you can go buy tickets for that date. Now, if you cannot make it, you can refund you can refund your tickets. Ticketmaster apparently sent the wrong information, but the Wilbur sent the right information. If you need to refund your ticket, if you can't make the new date, or you don't want to because you're like, ugh, I much prefer Boston in the middle of January than in May. I'm sure there's one or two people who are like, ah, I love like Boston in January, you get the slush, you get the cold, you get the wind. In May, it's just a beautiful spring day. I don't want that. If you want a refund, simply email info@thewilbur.com. Thewilbur.com, you will get a refund. But there's still some tickets left. And I imagine there's going to be some people who are like, I can't make it in May. I just can't stand the spring. And so if you want to buy tickets now for May, do so. Do it right now. Don't make a mistake. So much for like bringing the scarves to that one. I guess we got to rejigger what our merch is going to be. All right, I'm going to open up the phones.
There you go.
Look, I don't care. I don't care what the format was for today. I don't, what, Peacock going to do something about it? Sorry. we'll get to this thing. We're going to hear a lot about January 6th in the coming days because they're going to start to roll out more and more information. We got a very weird story about it. But let's tune into Fox's The Five, who are very reluctant that they have to admit that COVID is real. And that there's an actual spike in New York. Now, remember, Brian Kilmeade is like, why are we testing? It's a waste. Well, then you would ask, like, why are these Fox and friends, why are they all remote? What's wrong with these people? There's the Jesse Waters and Greg Gutfeld.
Just authorized a potential game-changing antiviral pill to treat COVID that greatly decreases hospitalizations and death. It could become available in the next coming weeks. So I think we all have to acknowledge here we're in boxes. We don't want to be in boxes. We hate being in boxes. We resisted being in boxes. We were told to be in a box out of abundance of caution just to get us through the holidays. And hopefully we'll be back to normal table situation when we return from said holiday. Greg Gutfeld, it's great to see you. Your thoughts on the COVID developments?
Yes, I find it heartbreaking that I can't be close to Harold. That we're this love in the time of pandemic is destroying us. There he is.
So annoying. But there they have to admit it. I didn't realize Harold Ford. Is that Harold Ford on there? Yeah, that makes sense. Note I want to make about this pill, as the Fox people admit that COVID is real, even though we're forced to be in a box. I wonder why. I bet you if Waters said, I'm not going to do it in a box, I'm only going to do it in the studio, they would have done it in the studio. But he doesn't want to be in the studio either. So this Paxlovid, which is the Pfizer drug, you should know that the scientists at Pfizer created Paxlovid with the help of ultra-bright X-rays of an advanced photon source. This is came from a U.S. Department of Energy facility at their national, one of the national laboratories. In other words, just remember, this drug would not exist but for the completely irreplaceable input and use of our and our government's facility. And as such, we will be paying completely top dollar, I am sure, for this pill, and the public will get no benefit out, at least in terms of remuneration, from this. It will all the profits will be privatized. And Pfizer will be hailed as being these benevolent overlords. But remember, all of this stuff, all of it, impossible without government help. Impossible. Would not exist. Very important to keep that in mind as we go forward here. Let's just do this clip too, since we're doing all these Fox clips. I found this pretty funny. So I guess it was on New Year's Day. Somebody was tweeting out about AOC in being in Florida on vacation, which I'm not sure what the issue was that she was in Florida on vacation. But apparently she was sitting with her boyfriend at a table, and there was a picture of her taken. And apparently the boyfriend was wearing like flip-flops or sandals or something like that. And they criticized. We have the, yeah, here it is. Okay. Steve Cortez from Newsmax. If leftists like AOC actually thought mandates and masking worked, they wouldn't be frolicking free in Florida. I don't know if it's been like, what, 6 months, maybe more, where everybody has sort of really come to the realization that you really can't get it outdoors. It's very difficult to get COVID outdoors unless somebody's right in your face.
Yeah, there's not really a documented case, or is that, maybe that's not true anymore, but like for a while it was like hard to find a case where that happened.
I don't know if there's still I don't know if there's a documented case of getting it outside, but for the most part, very difficult to get it outside unless maybe you're sitting at a table with somebody who's talking right in your face the whole time for I don't know, for an hour. So, and then Cortez says, and two, her guy is showing his gross pale male feet in not at a pool or beach with hideous sandals. Now, I'm not a sandals guy myself, but what are you talking about? Like, are there, I see people, and I personally can't do this because it just freaks me out too much, but I see people who wear flip-flops in the streets of New York City. Never mind, like, you know, at a beach town in Miami. And so AOC wrote out, she tweeted out this. Well, put up her tweet. If Republicans are mad they can't date me, they can just say that instead of projecting this sexual frustration onto my boyfriend's feet, you creepy weirdos. I think that's a pretty legitimate response. But apparently very offensive that she responded in that way to Fox and Friends today.
pale male feet. Sorry. Can we just zoom in on that quick before? Like, why? Okay. Pale male. Like, he's given away so much of his, like you said, like psychosexual stuff in, like, it's pale, it's male.
Very weird.
That's bizarre. Okay, sorry.
Very weird.
Matt, Ted Cruz, I thought about this, is the most criticized Republican from Democrats. Imagine if Ted Cruz just said, all you female Democrats that are criticizing me, you just want to date me. There would be such outrage. He would have to have an apology, a resignation. I mean, for her to come out and say this, I thought it was a joke. I thought I was reading the Babylon Bee, but it wasn't. Too. It was real. So it's unbelievable. But I got to.
All right. Well, we should say, the analogy would be people who would mock his wife. And the only person I know who's done that publicly is Donald Trump. And apparently that's the way to win Ted Cruz over. But let's be clear. There is no thing that Ted Cruz could tweet out or say that would get him to resign. We've seen that from time and time again from all the Republican lawmakers. Are you kidding? But this is what apparently they're so excited about being able to talk about an AOC tweet over vacation.
I like how they think they're the normal ones, and they're like, I thought I was reading the Babylon Bee. Like, no one that's not a media person knows what the Babylon Bee is.
Right, and no one who's not a right winger does too. Let's take a phone call. Let's do this. Calling from a 619 area code. You are the first caller in the year 2022 into the show.
Hi, is this me?
And it's me. Yes.
Oh, hi, this is Hillary, originally from San Diego and now living in Seattle.
Hillary?
Happy New Year.
From Seattle. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Happy New Year.
I just want to say that you look like one of my archaeology professors, and I'm digging it. It's really cool.
All right. Well, you just got an A for that, so congratulations.
Awesome. Thanks. Okay, so I actually work for Planned Parenthood. I started working in the clinics when I was in San Diego, and then I moved up to Seattle. And I know COVID, you know, definitely like a big concern nowadays, but I also wanted to talk about the HPV or the human papillomavirus vaccine. So there's been a vaccine for it since, oh my gosh, I can't remember when it first came out.
I would say probably off the top of my head somewhere around like 2006 or 7, I think it was.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember getting it when it first came out. And I've noticed that a lot of the patients I've been seeing in the clinic, they haven't had it or they don't know about it. So it was originally marketed towards teenage girls before they started having sex. And I just want to let, you know, the viewers and listeners know that it's available now for everyone up to the age of 40, like regardless if you have a penis or a vagina. So
and you can't get it over the age of 40?
I mean, you can, yeah. I mean, it's not going to hurt,
right.
But definitely, you know, those are the recommended ages. And there was actually a study that came out of England not that long ago from the Cancer Research UK that found that the rates in cervical cancer in people who with vaginas who had the vaccine from the ages of 12 to 13 were 87% lower than in unvaccinated population. Yeah. So this is like the first critical study that we have of proof that this vaccine works.
That's
so
great.
There's depending on how old people are, you can get it, or there's either a set of two or three shots. And then I also just wanted to mention really quickly that I've also noticed a lot of people in the clinics. So the only way to screen for this is through a pap smear. And the only way to do that is if you have a vagina. And I've noticed a lot of patients are convincing like a regular vaginal exam for the pap smear. So this is something very specific and very different from like a regular vaginal exam. So screening starts at the age of 21 years old. So as long as the results are normal, it's recommended to get screening once every 3 years. And then once people turn 30, as long as the results are normal, the screening is recommended once every 5 years.
Well, I appreciate the call and the info, and a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I have one more question, though.
Sure.
Okay. Well, actually, it's not a question. I'm actually really excited that you rescheduled the Big Live.
We had to.
I have tickets. I was definitely considering not going because of COVID, but I'm so excited that it was rescheduled.
I mean, it was hard to do because we were so psyched about it and people were so psyched, and it would have been a nice sort of like breakup of what I think the next 6 weeks are going to be sort of miserable for a lot of people. In addition to the idea of like, what if any of us get COVID before the show? We have to cancel 2 days before as people like have flights, or what if the staff there, or then just God forbid anybody who came to the show got sick or caused somebody else to get sick. That would have been just too, that would have been just too difficult to contemplate. So, by May, I think, you know, it's going to be a much more reasonable proposition. And I'm glad you were happy with that that thing. And you know, as we look at your term paper, we'll review and we'll give you some extra credit for coming to the show.
Awesome, I hope so.
All right, appreciate the call.
Okay, y'all have a good one.
You
yeah,
too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Matt just reminds me that Rick Perry pioneered conservative anti-vax being against Gardasil. It wasn't just him. This was a huge. Huge. That's why I remember when it was. This was a huge thing back then. They were like, if you give teenage girls, none of this stuff, this bat crap crazy stuff that we're seeing is not new. It's just a little bit like there's been a little bit broader adoption rate, I should say, because at that time, the right was saying, if you give teenage girls Gardasil, which will prevent them from getting HPV, which is basically like, I don't think you can see the symptoms in guys, but I think you can have it. It is a leading cause of cervical cancer. If you give this to teenage girls, they're going to go and have sex. And I want you to contemplate, like, even now that there is a vaccine for it, like, what do they think is going on in the minds of people that teenage girls are deciding whether they're going to have sex or not as a function of the opportunity for them to get cervical cancer? I mean, it's just so twisted. And thank God, you know, basically it's been deployed, and it's, you know, it's probably saved a lot of lives.
It's you look back at that era of conservative media, and at least Ben Shapiro and Dave Rubin were on the right side of that. Here's Ben Shapiro. Does anybody disagree with the notion that we should give Ron Paul the HPV vaccine? There's a whole bunch of them, like tell us about science Dems who link autism with vaccines, right? Like this sort of stuff. It's interesting how much they've all retreated from that responsible stuff about vaccines, actually.
Folks, a couple of sponsors. New Year's here. No better way to kick off 2020. And I did. But I'm making sure you're feeling like you're your best self. And that includes, of course, staying hydrated with Liquid IV. One stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates faster and more efficiently than 16 ounces of water alone. Plus, Liquid IV has incredible hydration flavors like watermelon, lemon lime, strawberry, pina colada, and more. I didn't mention it, but they also have tangerine. And, of course, my favorite, which is the matcha energy mix right there. Both those guys get me through each show. I'll mix up the second one. I'll mix them up both. Sometimes I'll do watermelon. Sometimes I'll do strawberry. I will do pina colada quite a bit. Maybe more than I'd like to admit. Doesn't matter. That's the way it makes me feel festive during the day. Liquid IV contains five essential vitamins, B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C. Let's say you're maybe indulging too much at night. Drink a 16-ounce of water with some liquid IV at night before you go to bed. You're in great shape. Oh, you forgot. Try it in the morning. You get three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. It's made with premium ingredients. It's non-GMO. It's free from gluten. It's free from dairy. It is free from soy. Science of cellular transport technology is what makes Liquid IV so effective. It's designed to enhance rapid absorption of water and other key ingredients into the bloodstream. Liquid IV is on a mission to change the world. The company's donated over 19 million servings globally. Grab Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the code MAJORITYREP, not Majority Report, Majority Rep at checkout. It's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code MAJORITYREP at liquidiv.com. Experience better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code MAJORITYREP. And also, maybe 2022, you decide, I'm going to get a little more healthy. Well, you deserve to know what you're putting in your body and why. And Ritual has clean, vegan-friendly multivitamins. They're formulated with high-quality nutrients in bioavailable forms that your body can actually use. You're not going to find any sugars or GMOs or major allergens. You're not going to find any synthetic fillers or artificial colorants. They got fresh taste, delayed release capsule design, which makes your taking your vitamins easy. Ritual delivers high quality nutrients, including vitamin D3, in just two daily pills. Multivitamins should contain key nutrients and forms that your body can actually use to help fill the gaps in diet. No shady extras. It's available now for women, men, and teens. Ritual multivitamins are scientifically developed to help support different life stages. Your multivitamins, and this is a good part, because this always used to happen to me. I buy some multivitamins. I take them. My doctor's happy. Oh, your vitamin D levels are up. That's good, because you never go outside. You never get any sun. And then I run out, and I forget to buy new ones, and then I just get out of the habit. With Ritual, your multivitamins are delivered to your door every month with free shipping. You can start, you can snooze, you can cancel your subscription at any time. It's super easy. If you don't love Ritual within your first month, they refund your first order. I am now taking the above 50 multivitamin for guys. For men, I guess. And to be honest with you, look, all I know is my doctor used to say to me, you're low on vitamin D. Everything else looks pretty good. And I no longer have that problem because I'm taking a multivitamin that has vitamin D. As other things, do I feel better? I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I know I feel better about the vitamin D. When the doctor says he's happy, I'm happy. You can get key nutrients without the BS. And that's the other thing about Ritual that I appreciate. If you look at reviews, stuff is made in the U.S. You look at reviews, it gets very high marks for having the ingredients that it says it has. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. You visit ritual.com/majority to start your Ritual today. That's ritual.com/majority. You will get 10% off your first 3 months. Check it out. Let's go back to the phones. Calling from a 405. You are the second caller from 2022. And your name is? Calling from a 405. Area code. Hello? Cannot hear you.
Is this me? Hello?
Yes, it's you. Hello?
Hi, my name is Ben from Oklahoma.
Ben from Oklahoma. What's on your mind, Ben?
So I'm currently in medical school, and there is a lot of talk, of course, about how the pandemic has impacted nursing and all kinds of staff. However, I think one aspect that is being overlooked is the impact of residents and basically their indentured servitude aspect to their training. And I just didn't know if y'all knew anything about that or if y'all done a piece about it before.
I haven't done anything on that in the past. Tell us.
Okay. Well, for those of you who don't know, the training for medical to be a doctor requires 4 years of medical school and anywhere from 3 to 7 years of residency where you work as basically a full-fledged physician, often 80 hours plus a week, average over 4 weeks. And these are contracts that you go into that if you happen to get kicked out of the program or want to leave or choose to do something else, you essentially torpedo your career for the rest of your life, basically. And you have 6 figures of student loan debt you have to pay back. So a big talk has been going on among residents nationally is about unionization to help prevent some of the worst factors that administration has for residents. However, there is an issue with the fact that, you know, you would be essentially abandoning your patients, so to speak, if you did try to unionize or strike or whatever, and that's been often a huge barrier to unionization. Add on to that, these are temporary positions, so the mentality often is just deal with it while you can, and then once you're out, you're an attending, you're a full-fledged doctor, you don't have to worry about it anymore. So this abusive system gets to be perpetuated over and over again without anyone really doing much to prevent it. And so I just didn't know what you, maybe Matt, Brand, Ladley, thoughts had on how residents can go about, you know, unionizing their labor and making important dividends that not only helps themselves with their patients, because these are residents that are overworked, you know, have really ridiculous call schedules, and that directly impacts patient care.
Yeah, I mean, I've never fully understood that system, frankly. It seems ridiculous to me. And, you know, the bottom line is, if nurses can go on strike, it seems to me that, you know, the medical equivalent of like adjunct professors could go on strike, because that's what it feels like. It just feels like it's so exploitive that it basically, you know, you're hooked essentially, and you can't go out. And I would imagine it also has implications as to where people choose to live to be doctors. You've worked for X number of years for virtually no money. You've got all of these this medical debt. It's going to limit your options as to maybe you want to go to a smaller town or something like that, but you can't afford to because you need to pay off this debt. So you need to go to a place where you can get higher rates. I don't know. I'm surprised. Like, we don't see like nurses unions, expanding into, in trying to unionize people in those, you know, as residents. But I don't really know much about it.
There's unfortunately, administration, much like the capital class and other sectors, has kind of pitted the workers against each other. So an expanse of nursing rights may hinder resident rights because of patient loads and things like that. So it's made it, they've very much taken under the divide and conquer aspect. So you kind of have to protect your own before you protect anybody else. And then that leads to infighting and thus, you know, and nursing unions, unfortunately, or fortunately for them, have been a lot better about pushing for better workers' rights and things like that. However, the AMA, the American Medical Association, is frankly an archaic system. It's filled with a bunch of older attendings who have very much the mentality of, we did it, so you can do it too. But
right.
So they oftentimes lobby for, you know, things that affect your attending career as far as, you know, against socialized medicine, because it has been shown to reduce doctor pay and for other things that actually directly hurt doctors in the long run due to, you know, various things such as managing too many patients and billing and things like that. So it's you kind of get hit off from all sides as a resident. And like you said before, you nailed it perfectly as far as once you get out, you have to kind of go to a place that, you know, can help pay your, you know, I'm going to graduate $200,000 of debt, and that's like more money than I ever even thought of.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate the call. Let me see. Maybe we'll get some IMers who will come with some ideas. Appreciate it.
Okay. Great.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Let's read some IMs. Zachary says, as a medical assistant, I never understood the outrage over Gardasil, but now it makes sense. It's the MA's job to inform the patient of, or guardian of available vaccines. The moms of these patients would act like I called their daughter a slut. So insane. Omicronst, the antitrust class action lawsuit, Young v. AAMC, alleged collusion to prevent American trainee doctors from negotiating for better working conditions. The working conditions of medical residents also often involved 80 to 100-hour work weeks. The suit had some early success, but failed when the U.S. Congress enacted a statute exempting matching programs from federal antitrust laws. Latest, Tom, conditions in residency are becoming more common for attending physicians. Hospitals are pushing for more and more these days. Sam's Festool Tracksaw. Why did you guys cancel the live show? Everything we know about Omicron so far would indicate that a fully vaccinated and masked audience would be fine. Are people who bought plane tickets supposed to just take that financial blow? Well, I don't know that a fully vaccinated and masked audience would be fine. I don't know what you mean by fine. But it would have sucked to have no notice and have me have COVID, which I think is not an impossibility over the next 2 weeks, frankly, based upon what's going on here. Half our office has either been exposed or has caught it. At home, it's been exposed. But if people have bought plane tickets and then they are unable to change them, send us an email and we will figure something out. See if we can help in some way. That was a consideration when we were contemplating it, and part of the reason why I wanted to make sure that we announced at least 2 weeks out, so that people could respond, you know, with the plane tickets. But yes, I know. I mean, it was not something we wanted to do. It just we were sort of damned if we did, damned if we didn't on some level. Evan from Portland, the residents at my medical school are unionized as of 2020, House Officer Union for the win. There you go. Calling from a 308 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Okay. What's going on, Mr. Cedar? How is your 2022 Silver Fox look self doing?
Kowalski from Nebraska. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So I gotta say, you're a farmer, right?
Well,
we've discussed this.
I mean, very, very small crop farmer.
Okay. So are you aware in the farming timeline roughly what is occurring in the middle of May?
Like what is, like, are we, like, we starting to see blooms? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I was just pointing out that for a lot of your Midwestern farm base of support for this program, which I assume has got to be like 80%, will be in the middle of planting season.
Oh, shit.
And will no longer be able to make it to a certain live show in Boston. And that's the only shit I'm going to give you. You're clearly making the right call.
I forgot it's planting season. Well, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
I guess you probably don't plant trees every May. Probably would be a good idea.
I actually plant my trees in March.
Oh, you plant trees in the fall.
You plant trees in the fall or early spring. Once the ground softens up, I'll plant. I'll be planting trees in early March, maybe April.
Well, okay then. That works. Anywho, just wanted to call, give you a little shit over that, but I would say don't feel bad about, you know, like postponing the show or whatever. Anybody, like, yeah, people made plans, but I mean, like, it's better than dying or killing a loved one.
It was just too tricky. I mean, I think that, like, honestly, if it was February 16th, I think we wouldn't have to cancel. It's just we're literally, particularly in the Northeast, it is crazy up here right now. It is impossible to go through.
My sister-in-law's a nurse at the local hospital. Like, we're getting swamped and things aren't looking too pretty here either. I think everybody should be more than well aware of that.
Yeah. I think just right now, New England, of all places in the country, is not good. And, you know, it's quite possible by the third week of January, the numbers drop off a cliff and will drop. It's also possible that, you know, January 16th could be the peak in New England. And then it drops from there. But we had to make a call, and that's the one. And but maybe we'll figure something out for the farmers. We'll do a special show or something.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to wait for that Omaha show. But I do just want to say to your audience out there that's really frustrated, just remember, it's not the Majority Report's fault. It's everybody out there that's pro-COVID and pro-spreading. So we must continue our righteous fury against the Jimmy Dore fans.
There you go. I appreciate the call, Kowalski. Thank you.
All right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Peace.
Roni fan, Sam, I love the Carpenter pencils. I'm in construction, and you may or may not be happy to know that your pencils have been used on some of Los Angeles' biggest projects, many featured on Selling Sunset million-dollar listing-type shows. Whoa! I always secretly scribe left is best on every project. Happy New Year. Nice. That's not fraud. I felt a bit of a Ronald Reagan-Apple argument tension when Sam reacted to Kowalski saying you plant trees in the fall. You do, but you also plant them in the spring. I got a Chicago fig and a Japanese maple that are going to go in early, late March, early April. Nightmare blunt rotation. Not me trying to snatch up Kowalski's tickets. Calling from a 303 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's the Letter Hack calling from Colorado.
Hey, Letter Hack. Happy New Year.
Same to you. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. How you doing?
Pretty good. Good. You may have heard we had that horrendous wildfire out here a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to give a quick update. Nothing that, you know, I could just repeat everything that's been said in the news and the headlines over the last few days, but the direct report from someone who's in Boulder County is that it's never been this scary for people who are normally in parts of like residential areas that are untouched by wildfire.
Mm.
It got to the point where my wife and I were packing up, ready to pre-evacuate before they listed our area for pre-evacuation. It never happened. But if that sort of thing, if we were in a pre-evacuation, that means go.
Right.
And so it's one of those things where the argument that, oh, they shouldn't be building houses in those particular areas because, of course, they're going to catch fire, that's sort of like everywhere now. Because here it is December, late December, and we're in like a month-long drought, and we have hurricane-force winds. And gust, anyway, up to 110, 115 miles per hour. Where can you hide? You can't. Anyway, last night we had a false alarm on our street where a couple of fire trucks came out, and you could just see it. All the neighbors around on the street, and they're just full of panic. And it was a false alarm, like I said, but it's at the point now where there's a wildfire, and you don't know anyone who is affected by it. But this time, everyone I know knows someone who either lost a house or is still evacuated and can't get back in or doesn't have power or doesn't have running water. And so I just wanted to let the viewers know how they can help out if they are so inclined, and a great place to keep up to date on what's happening as the recovery develops. Is that okay? If
I yes, please, please, please.
Okay, so check out Boulder Office of Emergency Management, which is Boulder, BoulderOEM.com.
BoulderOEM.com. BoulderOEM.com.
Yep, and it's like, you know, it's a great place to look for missing animals because a lot of wildlife, you know, in those cases, if you can't relocate wildlife or the place where the wildlife has been relocated to is already at capacity, then the thing to do is just let them go. And so then there becomes this process of trying to track them down again afterward.
Wow.
And so you can do that through this website. You can also figure out how to volunteer, cash donations, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, yeah, so never seen anything like this before, and I've lived here going on 19 years. And it's really to the point now where there is no place to hide. And it's a direct result of climate change. So, you know, the comet has arrived,
yeah,
so to speak.
Fire hurts all. Just I am the Boulder, Colorado, did not have any rain since July of 2021. And the first snow of the season was on December 31st, 2021. That's nuts.
Yeah, and so that snow was like a day late, and you know, we're still, you know, you don't get snowed in Colorado, but there, you know, it is the sort of case where it's so dry out here, snow normally melts in like a day or two, and it hasn't melted at all. So we got the cold temperatures and the snow just like one day late.
Wow.
But, you know, it was a little too close for comfort, so.
Just
wanted to give that update and how people can help out.
All right, appreciate that. Stay safe and happy new year.
Same to you.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Socks. Erie County's positive cases exploded so much that our contact tracing has been overwhelmed. They're now just asking people to isolate and trace their own contacts, but somehow school is still open in person. We've got, you know, school stayed open here too. And it is unclear to me what kind of transmission there is in schools. I mean, I think my sense is that there's a lot more COVID that comes into the schools than gets passed around in the schools. But I have not, and I don't know that frankly, we as a country do a good enough job to be able to assess this. But I think some teachers are basically saying, I'm going to take a couple of days. I mean, really, this week would have been a good week to do like temporary remote. Let everybody who has traveled, seen family, settle down a little bit would have made sense in my mind. But all right, you know, we're going to do Freebie Monday. This is it. We're back 2022. This whole show has been sort of almost fun half-ish. Right, I know.
Yeah.
Why not? Be a little benevolent. Right?
Yeah.
Come on, 2022. A little bit of New Year's spirit. All right, let's talk about this. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of this at all. So Bernie Kerik, who was a former New York City police commissioner, also, like a former just guy who worked for Rudy Giuliani, went to prison because he had some scandal, I think, associated with his taxes. I think it was, right? Was this right? I can't remember now at the time. At one point, Bush was thinking about hiring him as the nominating him as like the Department of Homeland Security chief when Rudy Giuliani was, but he's basically just a thug. Now he works for Fox News. And apparently he drew up a document for Giuliani on how Donald Trump was going to take power after losing the election. A lot of people call that a coup. A little putsch, right? Anyways, part of this document, we'll put the document up there. Just scroll through some of it. Do we have it, Bradley? It's a PDF, the Strategic Communications Plan, the Giuliani Presidential Legal Defense Team. And we have 10 days to execute this plan and certify President Trump. This was the timeline was from December 27th to January 6th, 2020 to 2021. And it goes through the different things. Here's the issues. And
look at the issues. The second one is underage people vote. Really? Yeah.
People voted, underage people voted, voters who voted numerous times, ineligible people voted. I mean, it must have been tens of thousands, right? And they're going on, and these are the talking points. And then they go into, but Dominion CEO is in there. Go slow, go slow. And yeah, they got all sorts of insanity. All the insanity that you've heard about in the run-up to the election, Navarro report on Dominion voting, Navarro report on immaculate deception, tech team analysis, all this garbage, crazy lunacy. Voter fraud highlights for the 2020 election USLA presented by the Giuliani team. Keep going. Margin 10,000 votes in Arizona. And they come up with all the different sort of like big lie. Big lies. I almost said live. Absentee ballots and their numbers and on and on. And then the question is like, how are they going to present this information, right? Like, what are the different ways they're going to disseminate this? And of course, part of it was they're going to have Giuliani go on and this and that. And here are the takeaways. And so then they come down to here. This is page now 16. Social media, SM, conservative influencers compiled by Christos Markridis and Sula Parasidis. Big names. Number one, Candace Owens. Number two, Charlie Kirk. Number three, Hodge twins. Do you know who they are, Matt?
No.
I have no idea. Number four, Officer Tatum. I don't know who that is either. Number five, Ben Shapiro.
No him.
Now, I don't know how they calculate. Like, Ben Shapiro has 2.5 million viewers on YouTube, 2.5 million on Instagram. I imagine he does quite well on Facebook. Officer Tatum has like half those numbers, but somehow Officer Tatum is more influential. I don't know. I don't know what the methodology is here. But then PragerU is number six. Dave Rubin, number seven. Number eight is the Daily Wire. That's the entire Ben Shapiro thing. Number nine, Students for Trump, Ryan Fournier. I don't know who that dude is. Number 10 is the Majority Report.
Sam Cedar.
Wait, what? Number 11 is Steven Crowder. Number 12 is Mark Levin. And then they go through medium and small conservative influencers.
That must hurt Michael Knowles to know that he's just medium. We're bigger than he is.
What's amazing is I'm more of an influencer with conservatives than Steven Crowder. And yet this dude was afraid of me.
Oh, sorry, Corolla, small time.
What the frick is this? This has been submitted to the January 6th committee. I guess it's time I come clean, folks. We've tried to track down who these people who did this report for Bernie Kerik are. They work for the, or at least they've done some work for the AEI, that's the American Enterprise Institute, together. And one report they did in August, Reclaiming Arts and Culture in Education, the Fundamental Importance of the Fine Arts. Like, I don't know who these people are.
They look like researchers. And if I would guess, like, and I'm not really sure, but so I'm not going to say what this person's major is in case it's the wrong CV I'm looking at, but not in a field of politics or anything like that. I think they were hired by Carrick to like put this together, and the reason they might not know that we're not conservative is because they don't really have a lot of familiarity. But
to be fair, it doesn't say these are conservatives who are influential. It says conservative influencers.
Mm.
And so maybe there's some data out there that shows that we impact the conservative YouTube sphere in some way. I have no idea.
Right. That would make sense.
It wouldn't make sense.
Well, it shows, but like when people...
Some reasonable explanation for how we ended up on that list. I mean, they clearly don't know that, like, we're not a conservative show. I don't think anybody would say that.
No, but it shows up when Data and Society does like this right wing influence maps of like YouTube, like Destiny and something will show up because he debates them all the time. Right. It shows up on the computer, on the algorithm type of thing. And that's probably why we do too, because we have so much like Bongino and Candace Owens content.
Right. Right. And maybe that's it, which certainly validates our reason for doing. But I mean, what about Crowder?
Well, you're happy to testify also if they want you to come.
I'm willing to testify right now. I mean, I haven't heard anything from Carrick, but I'm certainly willing to give my opinion on Carrick and Giuliani and then, frankly. In fact, I'll give my opinion on the entire list. Bizarre. Really bizarre. Bear at Home 2. In Western New York, my kids are being sent home with two rapid tests, one for today and one for after school tomorrow. It's nuts. Yep. That's what's happening here, too. Calling from an 843 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello, Sam Cedar.
Yeah. Who's this?
It's your friend, Barack Obama.
Oh, hello, former President Barack Obama. What can I do for you?
Just wanted to call and say Happy New Year. And I do appreciate you giving my boy Biden some flack on the Build Back Better.
All right, fair enough.
You would give him some.
Yeah, how about you step up?
Listen, not about that. It's about me calling you and telling you that I'm a big fan of your show. I don't like Biden too much. I think he's a piece of shit. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to curse at you.
That's all right. We're in the fun half now. I mean, in some technical fashion. So did you just call in to crap on Joe Biden?
No, no. I was going to call in to see to get your opinion on my impression of Barack Obama.
That was pretty good.
From Charleston, South Carolina.
That was pretty good. I think that's a pretty good impression.
Thanks. Oh, yeah, when are you guys going to ambush Steven Crowder again? And then I'll jump off so you guys can discuss.
All right. Well, I appreciate the question and the call. That's a pretty good Obama impression. Well done. When are we going to ambush Steven Crowder again? We can't say. It wouldn't be an ambush. I don't know. I know. We'll have to wait. We'll see. It's a good question, though. What else we got here? Oh, you want some good news? Well, let's do this. I'll do some good news in a moment. But 2022, we might as well start now. Very good chance the Democrats are going to lose the House. To a large extent, more or less irrelevant at this point, based upon what can get done. Joe Manchin, I think we're going to see a stripped down Build Back Better bill. Some people think that it might be more effective anyways to do a dedicated, a narrower set of things to do and do them correctly, as opposed to the sort of like interim stripped down version that the 1.75 version. It's up for debate. We'll talk about that in the future. Joe Manchin really doesn't want the expanded earned income tax credit, which has been incredibly successful in keeping almost, I think, 4 million kids out of poverty, helping Americans. Chuck Schumer today sent out a letter saying that they were really going to, that he... indicating that they were pushing for a carve out of the filibuster for voting rules, enhancing the Voting Rights Act or reestablishing it in some fashion. So the House is probably unlikely to be kept by the Democrats in the fall. It's 11 months away. It's a little bit early to make that assessment, but that's more than likely. The real question is going to be who retains the Senate. The best thing I can say about the Biden administration is that they've been very aggressive about lifetime appointments for judges. The numbers that they've put on the bench, I think, are larger than any president since Ronald Reagan. And I think they're going to get even more aggressive over the next 5 or 6 months. Dick Durbin, I think, is not going to have hold blue slips in the same sort of sanctity that Patrick Leahy did. So far, it's all been circuit and district judges, mostly from blue states. Mostly from blue states because Republicans will obstruct. But not if the Judiciary Committee decides to just ignore blue strips like the Republicans did when they were in control of the Senate. There are basically 10 seats at play in the fall for control of the Senate. This is going to be really important in terms of, at least in terms of judges, and in terms of maintaining some control over government. Who knows what Joe Biden's going to do going forward in terms of executive actions once the Build Back Better bill is in the rearview mirror. I wouldn't count on a lot, but stranger things have probably happened. But here are the 10 states to begin to pay attention to for the Senate races. Pennsylvania, you've got Republican Senator Pat Toomey is retiring. There's a couple of people running on the Democratic side for the Senate nomination. We'll go through all that over the years, but I just wanted to give you a heads up on what's going on with this. Pennsylvania, Georgia, Warnock is running for re-election. He had a short stint because he had replaced, Loeffler? Yeah, who was replacing Isaacson? Sessions. Arizona, Mark Kelly is up for re-election. He again was also a replacement, right? Yeah. Wisconsin, Ron Johnson is up for re-election, even though he said that he would self-impose term limit. In Nevada, Cortez Masto is up for re-election. She's a Democrat. In North Carolina, Burr has resigned. So that's an open seat, or will resign. In Ohio, same situation. Republican Portman resigning. In New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan has got to defend her seat, Democrat. In Florida, Marco Rubio is being challenged probably by Demings at this point. We'll see. In Missouri, Roy Blunt is resigning. Unlikely opportunity for pickup there, unless that guy Greitens, who is the governor, right? Is he still the governor or is he resigned now, right? He's resigned in disgrace. If he runs, there's a chance. So those are the 10. Those are the 10 seats that are in play. And Democrats obviously need to control 5 of those. So there are 4 Democrats who are defending their seats. And the rest are Republicans. So that's what's basically going to go down in 2010. We will be talking about that more in depth as the year goes on, but I figured just teeing up 2022, you should know about that. And just to head into 2022 with a sort of some some decent thing to say about Joe Biden. I think he's completely screwed up the Build Back Better initiative. We said this at the time in the spring when they opened the doors to Republicans. It was useless and was stupid, and it has proven to be a disaster. I think what they're doing with COVID right now is also a bit of a mess, at least in terms of how it impacts people. We'll see. I'll have a better sense in a couple of weeks, but this is not the approach that I would take. However, the one unequivocal good thing I can say about Joe Biden is that they took the job of putting federal judges on the bench seriously. Biden has put more people into lifetime federal judgeships, writes the HuffPost, than decades of past presidents. His court picks also easily the most diverse mix of people put on the federal bench by any U.S. president, both in terms of race, ethnicity, gender, and in my mind, most importantly, also in terms of mix of backgrounds in terms of the law. Biden's confirmed 40 lifetime federal judges this year, 11 appeals court judges, 29 district court judges. Trump had a total of 18 appeal and district judges in his first year. Obama had 12. George W. Bush had 28, Bill Clinton 27, George Herbert Walker Bush 15, and Reagan tied with Biden at 40. Public defenders, voting rights lawyers, union organizers, Native Americans, Black women, LGBTQ nominees, Muslim Americans. Of the 40 judges confirmed, 32 are women, 27 people of color, 21 are women of color, and 27 have professionally diverse backgrounds. 15 are former public defenders. That's great. Now, if Stephen Breyer could get his head out of his buttocks and resign, that's got to happen relatively quick. All right, let's play. Oh, this was good. We missed this. This happened a couple of days ago. Do you remember Matt and Bradley? Do you remember that video by the video the YouTuber named Sean?
Yes, I do.
Where is that dude from? Do you know anything about that guy?
I only know based on his accent. I think he's from the UK, but no, I know very little about him other than he makes good videos on YouTube.
Now, by good videos, well, like tell us, like, just give us a little hint of the production value. Can we look at, like, some of that Jimmy Dore video he did? Just pull that up. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're well thought out video essays, right? Like, I mean,
Right. Like, one thing that he does is he uses a image for himself. He doesn't actually video himself speaking, right? So it is like almost a podcast on YouTube in certain respects in that way. There's a visual element where he put up data and stuff like that.
Yeah, put it up. It's basically like a PowerPoint thing that he narrates. Do you have it, Bradley? Yeah, just put up anything. It doesn't matter. I just want to show the quality of this. It's good. I saw this video. I watched the whole thing.
And bags and hats and shirts and so on. Now, you might say, hold up there a second, Sean. Maybe this is an unfair criticism. Maybe this has nothing to do with money or chasing views. Maybe this is just a coincidence. Maybe Jimmy Dore just genuinely believes in the anti-vaccine arguments he feels compelled to share with the world. Maybe he's just not heard good counter-arguments yet. And I will admit that this is a possibility. A slight possibility. So, let's take a look at some of these arguments then. The first video I want to look at is titled Outbreak.
So he's just going through different Jimmy Dore videos. And Jimmy Dore, in response to this video that was put out there, it's about an hour long video, got about 620,000 views. Jimmy Dore responded by firing his producer who had changed the like rewritten an article that Jimmy Dore was citing to prove his sort of vaccine questioning stance. Now, Jimmy didn't respond to
doing his job, as far as I can tell.
Exactly.
And Jimmy Dore didn't address the other issues in the video, but it was all basically showing that Dore either never reads anything or, you know, is disingenuous. I mean, all stuff that I think, you know, no one's really refuted as far as I can see. But this really takes the cake. Jimmy Dore had Max Blumenthal on, who is from the Gray Zone. And this is where, like, we're entering into the Alex Jones territory. It's one thing to say, I don't know, I guess to attack Sean's video because it was too specific or too narrow or that it was the producer's fault, but that's not what they did. This is just full-on bizarre.
And then you have Sean, who made a video about you, attacking you, who... I actually didn't know he was affiliated with Bread2, but he's considered part of their constellation. And the video attacking you, which relies heavily...
I didn't see this whole video. They're talking about Bread2. Matt, what is Bread2?
I'm actually Googling Bread2 now. I mean, I know basically what it is. It's a bunch of people who are leftists that do videos, I guess. Like Sean, that are leftists on YouTube, as far as I know. Like, the serfs are Bread2, I'm pretty sure. Like that.
Call themselves Bread2, or did somebody else refer to them as Bread2?
I think they sort of call themselves Bread2. They have their own Wikipedia, I guess, now. But yeah, so they're sort of like it's a loose affiliation of sort of left wingers on making videos on YouTube.
And somebody just IM'd said Risk Imagination said, don't let Sean go under-recognized for how much of the source materials he combs through. While his end production is minimal lift, he reads articles referenced in his subject matter, and more impressively, he watched hundreds of hours of Dore's show. No easy task. Without a doubt, that's the thing. That video he did was, the production value was just sort of like, okay, you know, it was competent. But what's really amazing about that video is that he goes deep, deep, deep into some of that stuff, particularly in terms of like the vaccine efficacy and how it evolved. I mean, stuff like you learn some science, and it's all a reference, but it really is about Jimmy Dore's presentation. That's what it was. So here is Max Blumenthal talking about the Bread2. Which I guess Sean is loosely affiliated with. I'm not sure what that means, but I mean, are we technically loosely affiliated with Bread2?
Well, Bread2 comes from like a Peter Kropotkin thing, and I'm more of on the communist than the anarchist side of things, so I wouldn't say Bread2 personally, but I guess probably right. It's a big. I mean, the way Max talks about it, we definitely are part of it.
Okay, do we get like any type of like? Do we get a card or something like that or?
Well, we get a CIA paycheck, I think, is what we're going to find out.
All right. Well, let's check it out.
Unofficial sources. You know, the FDA says that. The World Health Organization says that.
He relies on official sources, like the FDA says this or the... But really what he's doing is just sort of showing that, well, Jimmy Dore rewrote an article from, what was it, like, I don't know, Fortune magazine or somewhere? I can't remember. All right, guy.
About you attacking you, who I actually didn't know he was affiliated with Bread2, but he's considered part of their constellation. And the video attacking you, which relies heavily on official sources, you know, the FDA says that, the World Health Organization says that. It looks a lot like this countering pseudoscience material. And it was very strategically placed. It was algorithmically boosted on YouTube.
Oh, it was definitely algorithmically boosted on YouTube. No fucking doubt about that, that they was given the favored treatment on YouTube, the CIA and the intelligence beholden that Google and YouTube, they're in bed with the fucking intelligence community. Of course they are, Google, Alphabet.
Pause it. Okay, so some IMers are writing, Bread2 is a is more of a signifier used by audiences, less than channels themselves. You could be argued to associate with Bread2, but there's no official Bread2, and nobody on the left calls them. If we did, it's all tongue-in-cheek. It comes from a subreddit page that collected left-wing YouTube video essays, but people don't really call themselves Bread2. Okay, so... And the bread in bread tube refers to
cryptography. Sounds like a CIA sort of misinformation IMs are coming in here. I think bread tube is actually a lot more structured than this.
You could be right. The CIA is probably watching because they use us as a vessel to talk about what the FDA said. Apparently it's the conquest of bread, Omicron says. Well, anyways, so it was algorithmically, what did they say? Enhanced? Can you go to Sean's page and see how much algorithmic enhancement they gave it? Sometimes you can order those late night TV. You can order some algorithmic enhancement, I think, right? Male algorithmic enhancement.
Totally algorithmically enhanced.
Let's see. You know what? I think it might have been. Zoom in a little bit on that because, well, no, wait a second. His popular ones got like one, go down a little bit. Let's see.
The bell curve one is classic. PragerU Lies. Like, Sean puts out bangers all the time.
Well, it's weird that they decided, well, they're obviously just going after people like Sargon of Akkad, CIA definitely wants to take that dude out.
Oh, yeah. The CIA definitely wants to go after work of Charles Murray, who I think was a CIA asset back in the day.
Of course. Scroll down a little bit. So it appears, keep going up. Now go. No, don't go. Just go to videos. Go back. Yeah. All right. So Jimmy Dore's got 620,000. And the response to BBC transphobia got 453,000. The first part, hijacking the dead, Terry Pratchett, dropping the bomb, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The CIA wanted to juice that. That got 1.3, well, twice as many views as the Jimmy Dore one, because of course the CIA wants to promote the idea that it wasn't necessary to drop a bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, of course.
Top CIA priority.
YouTube also wants to promote this dramatically. Dramatically, of course. All right, let's get back to this and see how the CIA is juicing Sean's numbers because they want to take out Jimmy Dore. Now, I know that sounds like what I just said was a joke, but that's not a joke. Go back a little bit so that we get the full, we can really savor what these guys are trying to argue here.
The organization says that it looks a lot like this countering pseudoscience material, and it was very strategically placed. It was algorithmically boosted on YouTube.
Oh, it was definitely algorithmically boosted on YouTube. No fucking doubt about that, that they was given the favored treatment on YouTube, the CIA and the intelligence beholden that Google and YouTube, they're in bed with the fucking intelligence community. Of course they are, Google, Alphabet, the biggest fucking largest, most profitable communications company in the history of the fucking world. Any company, of course they are. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. But yes, that was when, as soon as I read the story, I'm like, oh, that's they funded this shit, that hit job on me, because it was super professionally done. It looked like it had to have some resources behind it. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, feel free to interrupt.
That up. The idea that somebody's going to read or actually do some research, that there's a lot of resources behind that. I mean, I do this show every day, and Jimmy's out there like, just get a comedy show together. It's really, it takes a lot of resources. I don't even read any of the stuff I do. I just, I'll read a tweet.
You need a whole team at Langley to figure out that I'm spreading bullshit about the vaccine.
Yeah. The idea that the CIA is using Sean to attack Jimmy Dore. Do you understand how completely bat crap crazy this is? And these guys either believe it or are just willing to say it.
Yeah.
You know how demented this idea is? That the CIA is trying to take out Jimmy Dore because of his anti-vax? Well, how about this? If the CIA is in bed with YouTube and Google, and I have no doubt that they use data and what the CIA is, I have no doubt. But if the CIA is instructing YouTube to algorithmically enhance a Sean video about Jimmy Dore, why don't they just go to YouTube and go, hey, guys, The guy's been doing misinformation. Just cut him off.
Yeah. Hey, you know, instead of juicing Sean's video, can you make it so instead, so when he does anti-vax videos, it doesn't actually juice his subscribers like we can see that it does?
Or this, you would think the CIA could say to YouTube, just get rid of him. Like Twitter just got rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene. You can get rid of Jimmy Dore. His 100,000, you know, YouTube hits or 200,000, whatever it is, they're not going to do anything about it. Why wouldn't they do that? This is like the whole like birther thing. Like, he forged the live certificate of birth, but he can't forge the birth certificate. Yeah. He's got superpowers that allow him to do X, but not to do the most basic thing in the world, which is why.
You deploy bread tube before you pull down the real hammer.
All right, let's hear a little more of this.
Oh, how intelligence in the UK and US operates since the end of the Cold War. They operate through cutouts and assets. They don't want to take credit directly.
They're doing the same thing now with COVID. So anybody who has a counter narrative to COVID, they get money from these people to do a hit job, which is exactly what they did on me. So funny. The whole thing is that Jimmy Dore is a grifter. That's the whole thing. He doesn't really believe what he's saying. He's just saying this for clicks. And it's like, why would I do this? There's a lot of easier ways to fucking make money than trying to get your channel taken down, have the CIA fucking fund people to do videos about you.
I got news for you. Jimmy Dore has no other way of making money. Jimmy Dore has never made more money in his life than he has made in promoting things like Seth Rich and Clinton's Got Parkinson's and all of it. He's never made a dime more in his life. This is the easiest way that he's going to make money. In fact, it's probably the only way that Jimmy Dore can make money. He's found his audience and he's riding it all the way in.
Yeah, it gets interest from venture capitalists too. And the other thing I would just say is, like, Max Blumenthal about like official sources and stuff like that. Max is talking, when he's talking about silence narrative, he's talking about that Great Barrington Declaration from those American Institute of Economic Research folks, which is like a big libertarian think tank that's like, okay, if that's who we're going to put forward as who's being silenced, the same people, the same exact line that the Wall Street Journal has on those folks, like, great.
There was a great story that was done in conjunction with the Daily Poster by Walter Brogman and Alex Koch. Maybe we can put a link to this. How the Koch Brother Network, and I've talked about Hillsdale College before, has basically overtaken and financed a lot of this war on COVID. And we should say the war on the war on COVID. They don't want testing. They don't want, and to be fair, the Biden administration has completely capitulated on this front. The word is now, go back to work. Go back to work. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, people got what they want.
Yeah, they got exactly what they want. We're going to pretend like it doesn't exist. But the fact remains, the reason why there's all these airline, the reason why they did that 5-day CDC thing was because they wanted people who work on airlines to be able to get back to work quicker. Because they were getting COVID, they were being kept, and they were staying away. That's what's going on. It is the libertarians, the business interests, that want to pretend that COVID is not real because they don't want it to cut into their profits. That's what's going on. And the idea that the CIA is funding this video essayist, Sean, to take out Jimmy Dore, it is hard for me to come up with something more ridiculous than that. It honestly is. Like, I was going to say, like, that there are little green men who visit the planet. But no, I think that's actually more plausible than the idea that the CIA is using Sean to take out Jimmy Dore. honestly, it's hard for me to come up with anything that's less plausible than that. Why didn't they just get rid of his channel? Who are they? Who would care? It's crazy. Really crazy. Happiness is a warm coconut gun. I've been listening to MR for over 10 years, and it's extremely disappointing to see how dishonest you're being about that door clip. The main subject of that Gray Zone interview was Abigail Thorne and her YouTube channel being funded by Valent Projects. Why not mention that? Weird. Because I don't know who Abigail Thorne is, and I don't care. You should have the numbers. One bread tuber Vouch on your show. He has some very interesting opinions on CP. I don't know what CP is. Is who? But the bottom line is, I'm not addressing what they said. The idea that they presented some legitimate information about Valent Projects and Abigail Thorne, do I think that the CIA funds some YouTube things or has like a media disinformation campaign? Of course, because I've read a book. I'm not addressing that. I'm addressing the idea that Jimmy Dore is being targeted by the CIA and that they are algorithmically enhancing Sean's video. That's it. It's not incumbent upon me to go through every moment of Jimmy Dore's material and say, this stuff may be valid.
Particularly when we know what Jimmy Dore is using this to avoid addressing about Sean's actual video and the complaints. He fired a guy and as a scapegoat instead of addressing all of the misinformation he's been peddling. So spare me about addressing like the full context of things.
Yeah. I mean, it's absurd. It may be the case. People can go watch the rest of the video. There may be some stuff in there that is true. I know that Max's name is Max, that Jimmy's name is Jimmy. That's true. I didn't give them credit for that. It's true. I didn't say. They got their names right. I mean, it's just nuts. I'm sorry. That's nuts. I'm sure there's some material that they deliver that is accurate. I'm sure. But that wasn't what I was commenting on. Calling from a 941 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, okay. Cool. I wanted to make sure. My name is Griffin. I'm from Florida, the gunshine state, if you will.
Yes.
And we actually have concealed carry banned here. Or no, not concealed carry. My bad. Open carry. And that's... That was due to most likely some racism with the Black Panthers, but I had some issues with your Kyle Rittenhouse takes. And let me just start this off with saying, I don't think he should have been there. I think we're definitely on the same side when it comes to he's white supremacist adjacent. You may think he's a white supremacist.
I mean, I don't know whether he's a white supremacist or not. I don't think
he's in the wrong crowd.
Well, look, his ideology is not terribly important to me in the context of this. But yes, I would say he should not have been there. But go ahead.
Yeah. So I guess my issue with your sort of like on your show, you know, like calling him a murderer and other things like that.
Well, I didn't call him a murderer. That's a legal term. He's a killer. He definitely killed two people.
Okay, then maybe I was misremembering it there. That while I agree that it was immoral for him to be there, I think that the framing of the language, if you're trying to move people over like to the left, there's a lot of voters that are very single issue voters. And I don't agree with being a single issue voter, but there's a lot of like people, especially from the military that I know that are very gun rights heavy, but the left could tone down its stance on trying to ban specific kinds of firearms, and instead...
Well, wait a second. What has this got to do with Rittenhouse? I mean, look, I just think that the legal principle of if you take a gun and put yourself in a position where, like, you, I mean, and obviously the law is structured in such a way, I guess, in this instance, that it's not the case. I happen to believe that if you take a weapon like that and put yourself into a situation, particularly in one which, like, you certainly have the option in which to engage, right? Like, he could have stayed at home. Wasn't like he had any property of his own that he had to go down there to protect.
Wasn't even defending.
I don't know what he was defending in particular.
It was dumb.
He was just roaming around with a gun. In my mind, that would make you eligible for a manslaughter charge. Like, you, a reasonable person, should have known that showing up downtown to a protest with a weapon could lead to someone getting shot or killed. To me, that would be the standard. But,
So what I would say is that firearms out in the open like that, especially when you bring them to like political movements and things like that, I think that open carrying is a bad thing to do because it escalates things and it's a dumb thing to do.
I agree.
I think that we could, that the rhetoric, instead of moving towards just, you know, Kyle is terrible, I think that we should make a movement towards banning more open carry, trying to make it so peer-to-peer purchases require a background check.
Yeah, but you're just guilty of what you just accused me. You're not gonna, those single issue voters, they're not excited about what you just said.
No, but if you also, and I don't believe with compromising with Republicans when it comes to like fiscal policy because, or foreign intervention or things like that. But when it comes to like certain stocks you have on a pistol or certain grips you have on what's considered a pistol becoming felonies, there's laws there that just will, you know, if you just don't know what you're doing, you'll become a felon. You can't get a job anymore. You can't have your gun rights anymore. And we could go in and strip some of the sort of weird laws around that.
Yeah, I don't know what weird laws exist that you're talking about. I mean, listen, the subsection of people that are concerned about what you've just expressed, to the extent that those laws exist anywhere, they are not gettable voters in my mind. You have a limited amount of resources, and the question is, where am I going to deploy it? Am I going to deploy it in trying to, in hope that the absence of an impetus to have a, you know, to get rid of silencers, let's say, I don't know, on weapons is going to convince those people to vote for it? No, it's just not going to happen. That's like, I just think that, like, this idea of that you can convince, first of all, there's no way that any party associated with the left, broadly speaking, centered to the left, is going to get out in front of the Republicans on this. They're not. So if I'm a single issue voter, I'm always going to vote Republicans if I'm interested in guns, because if that's my only issue, because nobody else is going to come close. It's just not.
Well, my point is then, because the left, all of the people that we have on the left are voting on the left reality has a left-leaning basis. They're going to vote left because maybe they know more about policy, or they're more empathetic, or they just, you know, want rights for everybody. They want, you know, equality for everybody. You already have those votes secured. So trying to gain more voters, maybe not lose as many people in the House in the midterms. I know a lot of people who think that the right is morally repugnant, but they want people, they want their gun rights. They, so.
Well, like I say, the Republican,
are you trying to galvanize?
I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. You know, I heard the same argument with abortion rights too, 20 years ago. It's not going to happen. And there's no threat to gun rights anyways. There isn't. I wish there were, but there isn't.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate the call.
Yep.
Let's go to back to the IMs. Ban Don Gino. Don't worry. The rest of the Gray Zone video, Gray Zone story, was as practically as spurious as the what Jimmy got into. The Abigail Thorne stuff was just about one PR firm that did anti-Assad media in Syria is now paying YouTubers to put out info in favor of COVID public health measures. I mean, look, I don't think it is my opinion that if you're going to do what we do, you should not take that kind of money. It should be very clear. I'm doing sponsored content in this moment. Like, very clear. And not just, we have a little thing that says sponsor content here. It should be like the nature of the content. Like when I do an ad for, you know, Liquid IV or whatever it is, I say sponsor content. Now, because of the nature of the show that we do here too, like I got to make sure that either A, I use the stuff, like I like the product. There's maybe some stuff that I even use that I just don't think it's appropriate to promote. Off the top of my head, I don't know what that would be. And then there's also some, like, you know, industries that we just won't do. Won't do, like, an ad for Uber. Or I won't do, you know, financial advice or something like that. I'm not in favor of people taking money to promote COVID information, unless it's like an ad. You know, I mean, if somebody came to us and said, here's a PSA that we want you to do, and we're going to pay you money to do it, and you present it as that, that'd be okay. But I don't know who Abigail Thorne is. I don't know who the PR firm was, and I don't know what she said. All I know is that Jimmy Dore and Max Blumenthal are arguing that the CIA funded Sean's video as a way of inhibiting Jimmy Dore in some way. And that is bat crap crazy. And that, yes, that, in my mind, puts a question mark on anything they tell me in the future.
Yeah, the CIA definitely wants to put an end to the show that said, I want a Lava Jato t-shirt.
I mean, come on, give me a break. Like, how is that not obvious to people? How is it not obvious that like there are some things that just begin to undercut the credibility of people?
Well, it's pathetic damage control, and it's them playing to an audience, a different kind of audience, I think. Rockfin.
Kid tested, Politburo approved. At least I like a newsletter update next time you get a money bump from NATO. Jeez. Yeah, we brought on Stephen Wertheim on the show to talk about how we should begin to get rid of NATO as a way of promoting NATO. It's like that old think of an elephant, or try not to think of an elephant. Let's see. To the nursing student who called, Paul Jay at the Analysis News on YouTube has recently interviewed Jane McCleavy on her history as a labor organizer. A wonderful interview promoting the power of organized labor. Part 4 of the interview series about the hospital staff in Las Vegas. Check out that episode for encouragement, and check out Jane McCleavy's writings, latest book, A Collective Bargain, Unions Organizing in the Fight for Democracy. We've had her on, I think, 3 or 4 times, too, as well. But if you want to do... Paul Jay is good, too. But Paul Jay rhymes with CIA. So, And I mean, you tell me. You tell me. Let's see. Go to the phones. Calling from a 915 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Sam. This is Brian from San Antonio.
Brian from San Antonio. What's on your mind?
Hi, I had a comment, but first I kind of wanted to follow up on something your first caller said about the HPV vaccine. She didn't touch on it, but I just wanted to kind of mention the reason that men should get the HPV vaccine is you can sexually transmit it to females. And even if they're vaccinated, then they can contract cervical cancer. My mom had cervical cancer, and she survived in the early 2000s, and I learned about that, and I ended up getting my vaccine not too long after. But I just kind of wanted to emphasize that point in case anyone else was considering getting it.
Absolutely. And the problem is that men aren't aware that they have it. There's as far as I know, there's not even like a test. Is there? It's very difficult to know.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
No, famously, there's a HBO Girls episode where that not being a test for men is significant to the plot line. So, yeah, no, unless that's changed.
Yeah, I mean, and I am all about getting vaccinated now. That's why I was like about from everything I've decided. I'm going the other direction of anybody who is vaccine hesitant. I am now like looking for vaccinations that I can take. And that's why I asked. Then they said 40 and under. I was like, well, what about me? Can I go get one? If it's too late now, I don't know. But yes, it is important for everybody to get that vaccine because you can give it to your partner without knowing that you even have it. And unless they go in and get a pap smear, it can develop cervical cancer.
Absolutely, yeah.
Appreciate the call.
Well, I was going to make one more comment.
Please.
Okay, so I'm from San Antonio. I happen to be in London for New Year's Eve. I had a trip planned, you know, pretty far in advance. Decided not to cancel it since my friend group is all completely vaccinated, and we're usually pretty careful about wearing masks and things like that. But one thing that really surprised me is you know, it's kind of jarring coming into the UK thinking that, you know, this is a right-wing government. And kind of, even though they're not shut down like a lot of the other countries in Europe, just the measures that they're taking, you know, I, as an American, can walk into a pharmacy, download with a code from the NHS website, and they give me for free from any pharmacy anywhere that's listed, well, anyone that's affiliated with the government, and they give you 7 free COVID tests whenever you want, no questions asked. And so you have those immediately available, and you can use those. You upload, it's like a quick result antigen test that you can use, and you just scan it and upload it to the website, and you use that, your registration result as like entry to like New Year's Eve events and things like that. And, you know, it's just kind of surprising to me, even when you're in a place that I was thinking was going to be very conservative and kind of more like America. It's to the left. It's actually to the left of what we're doing under the Biden administration, where I think back to we had Jen Psaki with 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
In her press conference, like almost just laughing at the question, like the idea that we would give tests to people.
Yep.
Like, it's so comical that our progressive administration you know, is nowhere close to what, you know, a right-wing government in the UK is doing. And it's just, I really, you know, just get the feeling going back to Europe after COVID that, you know, Americans really have no idea, like, what it's like, you know, in the rest of the world when it comes to, like, health coverage. You know, or even when a conservative government doesn't want to shut down, they take extensive lengths, you know, to at least make people aware, you know, that they either... Yeah, they have COVID, or if they lie about it, even that you're knowingly doing so and not just going out randomly with no restrictions.
Yeah, it's insane. It really is. What we're doing is insane. And I think if more people had, you know, the experience that you had, people would realize that. It's there's the story on why we have so few tests in this country and why they're so expensive. I mean, it is just bizarre. And we're 2 years into this now. And right. There doesn't appear that we're going to have, like, you know, you should be able to walk down the street, and it should be, you know, basically, you know, you run in, and maybe it should be able to get tests at this point for this, like you buy a candy bar is really what it should be. They probably should be about the same cost too. Go in and get a bunch of candy bars, and you walk out, you take the test, and Radley's here because he took tests on the night of New Year's and found that one of his guests was infected. I mean, the testing is right. Incredibly helpful, unless it's very hard to get a test because it's expensive or because they're not available, which are the two things that we have in this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nuts. I appreciate the call.
All right, thanks.
Let's see. Union Jack. Sam, love you and what you do every day and every year. But sincerely, you spend too much time reacting to nut jobs, Republican culture war, and doors. Your channel is doing worse each month, and you should learn to do more progressive content, policies, and breakdowns. Your content is losing the charm and uniqueness. I think it's probably best, Union, that you now go away and find some better place, because I would contend that really we've been doing more or less a very similar thing over the many years that we've been doing this. I'd say the best critique of this show is, like, it hasn't really changed much in 10 years. We still 3 to 4 times a week do a long form interview. There's some weeks where we do 2, maybe, but where we go pretty deep into stuff. In fact, I would say do the most dry, boring stuff about progressive policy and politics that we could come up with. And then we do other stuff, but
yeah, I mean, who does as much postal banking content as we do?
Yeah. Who? I got to check in on that, incidentally.
The one thing that has gotten tougher is when, like, even when I started the show, it was basically like Fox News, and then you'd have like some big independent right wingers, but it's fragmented a lot since then. And like responding to that is difficult.
Yeah. But what other progressive show is considered a major, major conservative influencer like we are?
We got the Bernie Kerik Award. Or conservative media.
Yeah, what other show? None. We got to go with that. There's a lot of shows out there now. When we started, there was like, what, 2 or 3 other shows, maybe? Nobody else was out there doing this. Now there's a lot. So we got to go with our conservative influencer cred. Christo, don't forget the shingles vaccination. My bout with it last month was a huge wake-up call. Yes, I'm actually due for my second one, I think. I got to get that soon. Trashweed. Cis men can have health effects from HPV, though it is rare, especially true for queer men. Anal warts and cancer are possible. Worth it for everybody to get the HPV vax, regardless of gender or orientation. I'm 44. My girlfriend has had more than one abnormal pap smear since we started dating 4 years ago. I wish I had been given the HPV vaccine when I was younger. Says Josh. Aaron is not cool. When we were in London, our family was staying, the family we were staying with had so many in-home tests just in case they needed it. Zephi, I have a friend who works as a resident in a highly prestigious hospital. Part of the issue they've had in trying to talk to their colleagues about the working conditions is that they're all strivers and critique their role as individuals before even considering systems. When they're at the end of a 28-hour shift and make an error, they hold themselves to account rather than the situation created by the hospital. It's just taken for granted. That's how it should be, and the mentality is fostered in medical school. That is, I think, consistent with a lot of different dynamics in this country, frankly. Calling from a 210 area code. Who is this? Where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, Sam and Matt and Bradley. It's John from San Antonio.
John from San Antonio, how are you?
I'm okay. All right.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, and it's great to have you back.
It's great to hear from you. You seem a little off-put, but my enthusiasm to hear from you.
No, not at all.
Are you sure?
Not at all.
All right, sounds like
absolutely.
It a little bit. All right.
Yeah, okay. Right. So looking at the big picture for the 2020 Democratic primary elections from a progressive perspective, the one prominent fact is that almost all of the top contenders to win seats are women, and most of them are women of color. In fact, the only man that's in my current top 10 progressives to potentially win a seat is Greg Cesar, who's running in the Texas 35th District, who I talked about on the show in November, who's number one on that list. So in early December, the Biden Department of Justice sued the state of Texas, saying that the state's new redistricting maps dilute votes from people of color. The lawsuit asked the court to stop from using those maps and to make a new redistricting plans. Richard Panatta, poli-sci professor at the University of Texas at El Paso, stated that one of the most important questions when it comes to the kind of lawsuits, the timelines of how quickly you can get a federal judge to intervene. The next legal step is to decide a venue and assign a judge to the case, which hasn't happened yet. In the meantime, Texas is supposed to hold their primary on March 1st, 2 months before the next 11 states that hold their primaries in May. Votes are already being requested for absentee ballots. In the 28th district, Justice Democrats endorsed Jessica Cisneros, who is a 28-year-old immigration lawyer from Laredo, is back for a rematch against the awful Henry Cuellar, who's the only Democrat to vote against the Women's Health Protection Act, which would protect the federal right to an abortion. Cuellar is the fourth leading Democratic recipient of gas and oil money and is the leading recipient of private prison cash. He also voted twice to fund Trump's border wall. Cisneros supports Medicare for All, a Green New Deal, monthly $2,000 COVID checks for everyone, and the PRO Act. In 2020, Cuellar only won by 3.6 against Cisneros. In the latest poll by Rasmussen, Cisneros is up by 1 point. The 28th district has been redrawn, has a large portion of the southwest Bexar County, which encompasses San Antonio, and is in the 28th district. Having voters in San Antonio city limits should help Cisneros. She won by a much smaller portion of Bexar County by a wide margins in 2020. But I'm a little bit concerned that Cuellar is going to outspend her in the San Antonio television market. Cisneros raised $421,000 in the third quarter of last year, which is the last quarter that was reported, and that was the highest total amount of any progressive challenger running in this cycle. Unfortunately, Cuellar raised $643,000 in the last quarter, and from the likes of Koch Industries and Northrop Grumman, and has $2.2 million.
And Nancy Pelosi, I would imagine, too. Honestly.
Yeah, she went down there the last time, right? Unbelievable. One other wrinkle to the race this time is there's a third candidate, Tanya Benavides, she only raised $22,000 in the third quarter, but, you know, in the Texas primary, if no candidate receives 50% of the vote, there's a runoff. Benavides' candidacy may force that runoff. So I have two questions to you, Sam. If you were forced to choose historically what the biggest story of 2021 is, would it be COVID or the Republicans' lurch into authoritarianism? And the second question is Sinema is scheduled to run again in 2024, and a couple of polls spaced out over several months say she's down by 20 points to multiple potential opponents. Will this boomerang effect have an impact on other conservative Democrats whose centrist and progressives blame for not passing Biden's agenda?
Well, are those the only two choices I get for the story of 2021?
Well, I mean, yeah, go ahead and expound on what you
said. I honestly think that the real story of 2021, because the Republicans have been moving in that direction, as far as I'm concerned, for over a decade. COVID, I think was already here, 2020. I think the story of 2021 was Joe Biden's failure as a, you know, supposedly the master tactician of the Senate, failure to read the room and figure out how to get this done. That's what I think the big story is. I think they blew it in the spring. They kept saying that they knew, they had learned the lessons from the Obama administration, and they didn't. They didn't. And I think that the administration is now listening to all the wrong people. Larry Summers, that ilk. And I think I think this COVID thing is an example of the retreat. The other option they could have said is, no, we're not going to encourage people to go back to work and just hang in there. This is a good opportunity for us to pressure Joe Manchin and say, you're standing in the way of helping the economy. You're standing in the way of helping Americans. I mean, I really think that they blew it, you know, 8 months ago. But I think that's the big story.
Do you think that would have changed Manchin? I mean, do you think he was
affected? Had they not...
I mean, he wants to run again in 2024, and he thinks he can win. I think they should have told him, you can't win. You know, vote your conscience and help people. Because I don't think he's going to be able to win.
Well, I don't know if he thinks he's going to be able to win or not. I don't know if he thinks he's going to run again. But what I think they should have done is, instead of opening it up to Republicans in whatever it was, April, and trying to make it look like they were being bipartisan, they should have rammed that bill down their throats. Everybody's throats. Don't give Joe Manchin time to meet with no labels and have people organize their... don't give time for Joe Manchin to make a deal with Chuck Schumer or to sign some letter in July. No, pass the frickin' thing in May. That's when it should have passed. They should have had that bill ready to go, and they should have done it in May. They slow walked it. They let the Republicans come in, and when the Republicans couldn't do it, they let Portman and Sinema develop it, and that was it. They should have just taken the bull by the horns and done it then. Because the more time you give people who are a back foot to right themselves... I mean, we were talking about Dr. Seuss when the COVID bill passed. Dr. Seuss. That was the only pushback. They should have done it right then. Not invite the Republicans in to sit with Biden. They should have just sucked it up and said, there's going to be a week or two where the Republicans say that Joe Biden shoved this down our throats. And that's it.
Do you think... Biden was a bigger villain, or that, maybe assess that compared to Sinema and Manchin for this year? Do you think they're on equal footing?
No, it's not a comic book. It's not a comic book. It's about competence. It's about Joe Biden, like, just them not understanding the political moment. The Democratic leadership is just completely out of touch. Is acting upon the absolute wrong worldview of what our politics are like today. I mean, it's quite possible that, you know, and it's quite possible that, you know, Joe Biden doesn't want this thing, and Nancy Pelosi doesn't want that thing, and Chuck Schumer doesn't want this thing that they pretend that they want, and this and that. But none of them wanted it to turn into this type of crap show that it is. None of them wanted to be this type of abject failure. And
I think, go ahead.
And the way to avoid that would have been to not worry about bipartisanship, because no one gives a shit about bipartisanship. No one does. They may say it sometimes, but it is not what the voters act upon. That's just from a political standpoint. They should have taken the momentum they had, and they should have realized that we don't have a window. I mean, look, we were saying it on the show over and over again. It's the first 200 days. That's it. That's all you're going to have. It was obvious. But these are people who are just, they're ossified. Their view of politics is ossified. Is that even a word?
Do you feel that Manchin was serious about actually switching to the Republican Party? Because that's the only thing that I could see Biden being concerned about, because that way he can't appoint judges either, can't get a Supreme Court judge, and his agenda will die also.
I suppose that's a legitimate concern, but I don't know. I mean, but you wouldn't have given time. This is basic stuff. If you have the upper hand, you strike. Like, this is literally like Sun Tzu stuff. It's that basic. This is stuff that you read aphorisms in the bathroom, in a book that's in the toilet, that people are just, you know, you read when you're taking a poop. You have the upper hand, you strike. You don't go like, oh, we're going to hedge our bets and have people think that we're bipartisan. It's absurd. It was absurd. It was a failure.
If Biden told Manchin, like you said 8 months ago, like, Joe, there's no way you can win a Republican primary. So if you're thinking about actually, you know, switching to the Republicans, you know, good luck staying a senator, you know.
My point is this, is that if you had moved the process forward, instead of inviting the Republicans in, just say, I'm sorry, Joe, I'm going forward here. You can either vote or not vote for it. Manchin would not have had time to be meeting with, like, you know, billionaires and millionaires in no labels to come up with a strategy of how we're going to do this. Right? Like, we heard the audio and all that stuff happened over the summer. like they just needed to just steamroll, and they failed. Do I think Kristen Sinema is going to provide a lesson for people? I think, you know, if you're in a purple district. But, you know, most people are not as tone deaf as she is. Mark Kelly knows what he's doing.
No, but to voters themselves. In other words, a lot of centrist voters are really pissed off at both of them for not passing, Build Back Better. And especially, I mean, when it was at its, you know, $3.5 trillion. So are they going to... you know, necessarily say, you know, this is the conservatives are the ones that are taking, you know, not passing the.
It is really hard. It is really hard to blame the other party. Like, look, they already passed the COVID relief bill, right? I don't know how you go out there and you blame conservatives at this point. Joe Biden said 6 months. Joe Biden.
Democrat.
Yeah, I know. I understand. But Joe Biden said 6 months. Like, his read on the Republican Party, his read on all of it was wrong. It was wrong. It's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
All right, dude. Talk to you later. Bye. Okay. It's good to hear from you. Happy New Year. Fettuccine. Hey, Sam, if I bought you a foam cooler with some venison steaks and dry ice to the live show as a gift, would you accept it? I would not. No, I do not accept meat or dry ice or foam coolers in person. Congressional baseball fan. Look, I know a lot of people are sick of hearing about 2021 variants, but Sam, the people want to know, what were your top apple varieties of 2021? I'm going to say something that's fairly controversial here, but I would say, obviously, the Snapdragon, but I will concede that the Lucy Glow, which is a Pacific Northwest apple, I did find very intriguing last year. That's all I'll say. But when you cut open an apple and you see it marbleized, like a red marbleized look, that's pretty impressive. I don't want this to go to Ronald Reagan's head or anything like that, but I'm just going to say that. Maybe I'm feeling generous. Calling from a 612 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 612. 612. Calling from a 612 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Oh. Sorry, Sam, 1 second.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you.
Hi, how are you?
Now you sound worse.
Oh, okay. Hold on 1 second.
All right.
I've got a new phone, and I am clicking all the wrong stuff. How about now?
You're better? Fine. You're fine now. Who's this? Where are you calling?
All right. My name is Carl from Minneapolis. How are you, Sam? How's your New Year?
New Year's fine. How are you, Carl? What's on your mind?
I guess I feel like I would reiterate a lot of the stuff that we've talked about today. good choice on the show. Was dreaming about coming myself, and sitting here with my partner after a very long 2 years. We have we are both restaurateurs. My partner is immunocompromised, and we have been out of work for a long, long time.
Aye, aye.
You guys have been a very good comfort to us, but we are out of money. We are starting to live a little bit on credit, and we are worried and scared. And I just wanted to share a little bit about, you know, just kind of share our story, just because I think there's a lot of people out there right now that are really struggling. And I just wanted to say, hey, we're here. There's a few of us that are holding out and scared and not wanting, you know, you're talking about that stuff before. I'm that person that doesn't want to go to work because I don't want to kill my partner. My job industry has the only jobs I can get right now are restaurant jobs, and it feels like a death trap. You know, I'm not worried as much about myself, but my partner of 4 years, and that's just, man, it's rough. It's rough out here for a few of us. And I just wanted to reach out to the other people like myself and go like, hey, you know, we feel you, and be safe. I just last 2 weeks have started putting in job applications. I got boosted, so I'm feeling better about that. But yeah, Sam, you guys have been a great comfort to us. And, my day is literally I'm a Minnesota kid. I started listening to the show, and I drew to you right away. I grew up in Wilmer, which is kind of about an hour from where Matt went to school. And, so I'm sure, you know, sports fans CBD enjoyers and, game nerds and things like that. I know that there's a lot of diverse people in this group, and I just wanted to say thank you and Happy New Year to all of you guys. Everybody in the chat, I'm a lurker. You'll see me in here every once in a while, but I mostly just game and listen and watch you guys, and you've kept me sane. I feel like my partner says it all the time. She's like, I feel like I'm going insane. Like, I feel like people just want me to die. And I go, yeah, I agree. We've had a long, two hard years, and I just wanted to say Happy New Year and thanks.
All right. Well, our heart goes out to you guys, and yeah, I think there's a lot of people who are basically where you are now, where the support that came over the past couple of years was enough to stay afloat, but I think people are starting to hit a wall now, and I think the next 3 or 4 months, in terms of like people's finances, are going to be really, really tough.
It's really bad. I mean, we survived by we saved as much of our employment as possible. We threw it all into savings. We lived in restaurants, and we didn't make a ton of money in the first place. We were making more money on unemployment than we'd ever made in the restaurants. I'm a chef, and she works front of house, so she's always made more than money than me. But we saved as much as we could. I fucked around and with a little Dogecoin. I hate great crypto, but I made a little money on that just because I had free time and I had some extra savings.
Yeah,
for you.
Of that and credit cards. So we feel very fortunate and lucky that we've been able to just kind of hunker down and live. I just wanted to say thanks. I know say hi to everybody that's not here. Also, Michael is a big inspiration to me. And, as a person who left TYT on my journey of trying to find news because of Jimmy, I started watching his stuff and was like, this is toxic and I don't want to be a part of it. And I found you guys, oh man, it feels like four or five years ago now. And it's fun to find your political and kind of spiritual home. And as a person who fights in both those circles, Michael was a huge inspiration to me. So anyway, much love and happy New Year to everybody.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the real perspective, which I know more of, frankly. I've seen things like that where people have been immunocompromised or are concerned they have some lung issue in the past. Like, you didn't never see that in all this talk about how fast we should reopen, and actually it's not that big of a deal, and Fauci's been using it to, like, do an authoritarianism on everybody. Like, that stuff is all missing.
And do people not think – I mean, like, look, the bottom line is it really – and we can see it now, right? When there's like just minimal restrictions, where there's no lockdown, you got restaurants closing, you've got other places, because people just don't want to go and get exposed to this. And yes, I do get the idea. Like, you know, we had an IMer saying, if everybody's vaccinated and wearing masks in the thing, aren't you fine? Maybe 800-900 people, maybe everybody walks out of there fine. Maybe nobody walks in with COVID. Maybe nobody while they're traveling got COVID. Maybe they don't give it to anybody else. And maybe the people walking out of there don't give it to somebody who is immunocompromised. But we just don't know at this point. Not when there's 500,000 infections a day. Not when there's, you know, almost 2,000 people a day dying. 1,500. You know, at one point over the summer last year, I think we got down to like what, like 140 a day? I can't remember what the lowest count was. Maybe it was under 100 at one point, just briefly. And deaths from the flu in this country, it's estimated, because we don't really, because we just don't have a system but they believe it's around 88 a day for the flu in normal times. People die from the flu every day, 88. When we start getting around those numbers, then we've got an endemic. But when you have the numbers that we have here, it's not just a question of, like, it's not going to make everybody sick. It's not just a question of only a certain percentage of people are going to get long COVID. It's also like, how many people are going to be denied a hospital bed for something else because there's too many people in there because of COVID? How many ICU beds do we have? So our system is just not built for this. One more good note. Start 2022 off. On December 27th, the National Labor Relations Board issued a notice. And I guess it was done in the Atlanta Opera, Inc., 371 NLRB, number 45, 2021. I'm not exactly sure what that means. I think it's a case that they're looking at. And it has invited parties, and essentially amici, which are people who are interested tangentially, to submit briefs addressing whether the board should reconsider its standard for determining the independent contractor status of workers. Should the board adhere to the independent contractor standard in Super Shuttle DFW Inc. from 2019, or should it replace it? Should the board return to the standard in FedEx Home Delivery NLRB 2014, either in its entirety or with modifications? The long and short of this is the National Labor Relations Board is looking at the classification of employees, particularly for the gig economy. Now, I don't think that they would go to someplace like AB5 in California, which had to be rolled back a little bit for like writers and stuff like that. California has some fairly unique categories of contracted workers. But things like DoorDash or Uber or, I don't know, TaskRabbit or whatever the other gig employers or non-employers, contractors they would call themselves, are. And the idea is, and this has implications that are huge for people. When you go from contractor to employee, you get a whole new set of rights that contractors don't have. You start to build a Social Security for your retirement. You're eligible for unemployment insurance. During COVID, we expanded unemployment insurance, not just in terms of time, but for who was considered eligible for unemployment insurance. So contractors, people who are, you know, driving for Uber, could get unemployment insurance, but now they can't. If the National Labor Relations Board has a different standard as to what constitutes a contractor versus an employee, then there's going to be a whole host of people who are going to be eligible for unemployment insurance. There's going to be a whole host of people who have protections as workers. You're going to be able to strike. You're going to be able to form a union. So this is pretty big stuff. And they wouldn't do this unless they were looking to change the standard. How far they'll go, we don't know. But worth keeping an eye on and understanding the implications. Joe Biden's administration may suck in a lot of different things, but the bottom line is, when you're electing of the two parties that can win a presidential election, when you're electing the one that has access and more interest in appointing people to the National Labor Relations Board who want to protect workers than the other party, there's some benefit to it. Same with the FDIC in terms of bank regulations. Just saw the FDIC, the board, outvote the chair, and now she's resigning, Trump appointee. Personnel makes a difference. It really does. All right, going to take two more calls and then read a couple IMs and then get out of here. Calling from a 551 area code, been hanging on the phone for over 2 hours.
Hi, Sam. It's A Square. How are you?
A Square. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. I'm hanging in there, Sam. That last caller is part of the reason why we've always supported the show, too. You allow people to come in and tell their stories that are so poorly reported, and that would be so... so important also and for the upcoming election, for people to understand that what's really at stake. You know, it's just this administration, you know, it's like a repeat of Obama. It makes me so furious. It's the same flawed strategy that was employed. And I bet you it's the same people, you know, the same missed opportunities with the housing crisis, you know, and this time is, you know, rental assistance, income support. You could drop the Medicare age to 55, 60. I mean, I could go on, but, you know, you and I have talked for years about whether this is incompetence or this is malfeasance or... But it's just, and the ossification of the Democratic leadership, it's just so frustrating. But yep. Happy New Year. Yes. Oh, happy you. New Year.
Thank you, A Squared. I appreciate it. You have a good New Year, too.
Listen, and if that, you know, that caller, if they need help with the membership, you know, I'll send you an email, okay?
All right. Thank you, A Squared. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Take Bye-bye. Care. Bye-bye.
All right, the final caller of the day. Calling for a 317 area code. You are the final caller of the day, assuming you're on the line.
I am.
There you go. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
David. I'm calling from Indiana.
David from Indiana. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for letting me get on here. I've tried to call a few times. You guys are popular, and I've sat on hold for a long time, never got through. But a little bit of platitude. Beard looks great.
Thank you. Appreciate
Very
that.
Serious. Should totally keep that.
Might.
And I appreciate your take on, you know, COVID and the way, you know, it affects people. That little unsung minute detail that we don't get out there much. And then the rest of it is a bit of a doomer pill followed by maybe some hopium in the form of maybe a big ask.
Okay.
the Doomer pill first, of course. Cause bitter always starts it off. You know, we're facing, you know, everything. Every phone call you've taken today, all the stories you've touched on, all amalgamate to these same things. And they all trace back. But you know, we've got, you know, the climate change. Nobody doing anything about it. The ice shelf breaking. Got COVID. We got America goose stepping towards either a fascism or some kind of a corporate ran oligarchy / fascism who may duke it out in the end. We've got, I mean, we're just facing a lot of issues as leftists, I think.
Yeah.
And we don't have, there is no singular message. And there is no message that'll completely fix everything. But I think in for the hopium and the big ask, guys like you, the other people that you know that do the same thing that you do, TYT and, you know, Matt with Left Reckoning, I think a big win for the left would start with everybody who has your guys' kind of pulpit just saying national strike now, constantly, by the hour.
I mean, I got to tell you, like, I just don't think that that is the, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I think that the only way that there's going to be meaningful change is when people understand that their one sort of leverage point is their labor. But there has to be a lot more organized, and we could say it, I could say it every day. But it, on some level, you start to get more than diminishing returns. I think you need to have, it's far more effective to tell people to, you know, to organize and build relationships, at home and, you know, in their local areas, because it's one thing for me to say with, you know, maybe, I don't know what our reach is, a couple hundred thousand people, maybe over the course of a month or two, you know, different individuals, maybe more, but still not that many, you know. And the idea of, like, when I see people say, you know, call for a general strike. I mean, that's all well and good, but that's like, you might as well be saying, like, you know, we need unicorns to march in. People need to understand, honestly, well, on some level we do, but rather than just call for unicorns, it's better to grow grass that unicorns like to eat. And, well, you know, just to extend this metaphor.
I don't agree with your take on that intellectually at all. And I totally understand that. And I understand that if you know, like you, say TYT, Kyle Kalinske, anybody who's even considered vaguely left, did that, there'd still be a chance that it may not amount to anything. However, I think
there'd be a really big chance about it. I mean, look, the bottom line is, like, the value of these shows, particularly in this space, like, you know, look, if I had Tucker Carlson's platform, it might be a little bit different. If we were on radio talking to, you know, 1 million, 2 million people a day, might be a little bit different. But the value of these shows is very narrow in my estimation. And it is really to educate people like you, is to preach to the choir and have the choir go out and do these things. And it's not but the choir, telling the choir to go out and, you know, make converts is not, it's our job to provide the choir with the tools to go out and get converts. Just saying general strike is not going to do anything. It really isn't. I mean, I agree, you know, but you know, I think, like, talking about specific strikes and showing that, like, the nurses in Worcester, they won their contract fight. You know, Kellogg's trying to hire scabs. They're losing. We could go on. Yeah. Showing the efficacy of these things is more important.
That would be kind of like be the follow up. I understand, you know, throwing something out there that doesn't have a more minute message.
But it's not a question of minute message. It's like, if you keep saying general strike, at one point it means nothing to people. Like, if you call for something that you're not ready to do, and we're not ready to do that, if you keep calling for it, then people just start going to ignore it, and it's never going to mean anything. That's the issue I have with that. But
my fear is that if we don't somehow, the right has been very successful at creating avalanches out of nothing.
Well,
and
out of resentment, out of resentment, out of hate. I mean, they have a much, their job is a very different type of job.
Oh, I understand. But one thing is universal for left and right. Actual fear. All humans fear their demise. And I think we're looking toward it, man.
Well, hang in there. And, you know, take that energy and, you know, I don't know if it's join your local DSA. I don't know if it's find another group that's around. You know, it's a tough time. It's a very tough time, too, to do this type of stuff because COVID is so isolating. But hang in there. And we'll do our best, and we'll see.
I got you. Well, appreciate your time.
All right, bye-bye. All right, let's do some IMs, and then we're out of here. Sorry, we've had people holding on the phone for now well over 2 hours. That's the downside of, like, opening up the phones early. Some people get on, some people end up holding on for forever. Chris Burdick, the beard makes you look like you're Ron Silver getting ready for your lead role in the Sam Cedar biopic, making some questionable character choices. I just feel like Sam would have a beard. I used to have fights with Ron Silver back in the day. Clown Show Mike, keep the beard, Sam. I've seen door stand-up. No, Jimmy, this is the only way you can make money. Graham Hapage, she's Sam, looking fine. Wow, people really like the beard. I'm in Central Oregon, and testing lines are huge. I was in a 50-car lineup this morning, got an appointment nearby for an hour later. Couldn't get tested yesterday. I'm a contractor. My client has COVID. Oy, was in her house all last week, masked, of course. Rapid take-home tests are unavailable in Central Oregon for a week. I just tested negative on my rapid test for my doc, trying to buy some for my family. Someone thanked Jen Psaki for making a joke of take-home tests. They'd really come in handy now. Of course. Unbelievable. Mark O'Brien, I was fully vaxxed by Pfizer, boosted by J&J, per my uncle who worked for them for 20 years and helped develop the vaccine, and I stupidly went to a maskless Christmas party. A few days after the party, I tested positive for COVID. I am immunocompromised, and I'm glad I only have 4 days of mild symptoms. Glad to hear it. MSNBC-der, holy shit, Sam, your beard looks so good. Silver Fox just went up a level over the winter break. Fierce Deity, huge self-report by Kilmeade that he reads and enjoys the Babylon Bee. Yay, Tingle. You can't get it over the age of 40? Good grab, Sam. Rick Perry had a stake in Gardasil and wanted to require its use in Texas.
Huh. Oh. I assumed he was anti-vax. Maybe I misremembered that.
Yep. Union Robbie. HPV in men equals genital warts. I've had that uncomfortable visit to the doctors. Queenie Beanie. Hi, Sam. You look great with the new glasses. Also, thank you for consistently talking about Gardasil. How conservatives are brainwashed into not letting their daughters take it. Personally, my conservative mother refused to get me the HPV vaccine when I was growing up and showed me weird right-wing articles about how it causes brain damage. My OBGYN was really frustrated when I tell her I didn't want it and couldn't explain why. Your program has helped me get the media literacy to challenge her on this, and I convinced my brother to get the shot this year. Thank you. Oh, I appreciate that. Kirby 424, solidarity with the graduate students at Columbia University that have been on strike since November. This is a hugely important strike due to the fact that labor organization, not something generally associated with academia. More attention is needed to this struggle. Yeah, indeed. I've been trying to retweet some of their stuff, but maybe we should. Didn't we have them on or no? No, the grad students. No, we talked about it. Dim Tool, we'll try and do that. Friend of the show, Eamon Animations, a new banger, Punished Bernie. I watched that the other night. It was amazing. All right, five more. Slappy Tubbs. Sam, curious what other books you read while taking a poop. Me, I read Ching's Building Construction Illustrated. Highly recommended pooping material. You know what? That sounds pretty good. I would be lying if I didn't say that it's generally like the latest copy of Family Handyman. I know that's a little embarrassing. But sometimes I also will read Fine Woodworking. I got to check that out. Ching's Building Construction. I just saw one of those Festool. It's like a biscuit maker, but they make it actually for like, they have metal hardware. God, I don't know. I get served that up on the web now, and it's distracting me. Madman Sam, only 650 views then? Why didn't the CIA push to 10 million? Because that would give it away. Ray, Sam, did you see BreadTube graphics someone put out there when they pasted Ryan Grimm's head on you flexing suns out, guns out body? You know, I did see that. I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I was like, that can't possibly... I was impressed by my arms, to be honest with you. I felt like that somebody had, like, done something to it. I was. I think I've already lost those. I think I did a lot of push-ups in anticipation of that. Ben Zed 6, Hodge Twins are reactionary fitness nuts. All right. Three more. Chicken Shit Cedar. Sam, if I show up the live show with a plastic... Oh, you already asked me that. Oh, of regular ice and walleyes, would you accept that? No, I will not. Christo. Sarah Nelson did an excellent spot on CNN concerning the CDC five-day rule. Did you see her potential candidate for Congress, etc.? Very well, maybe. I don't know. Jamon Raps, Happy New Year, Sam and crew. Got my Majority Report hoodie and hat for Christmas. Been wearing it every day. Styling and profiling. Anyway, did you party it up on New Year's Eve, Sam? I had three friends over for dinner. We all sort of like a little bit potty over the vacation. And, you know, I was in bed pretty early because one of their kids wouldn't go to sleep. So we had to break it up early, but that was fine. Check out the scarves at shop.majorityreportradio.com. Those are pretty good, too. All right, the final IM of the day, Jonathan Armstead. Sam, thoughts on Netflix Don't Look Up movie? I'm happy that Sirota wrote it and agree with the politics and how the media poorly covers things, but I didn't find it funny out of one reoccurring Jennifer Lawrence joke. I would say my short version is exactly that. Folks, Matt, hope you feel better. Bradley, both you guys, good job today. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. See the truth in life, all but finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm with a choice.